सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है। वेलकम टू सोच विचार। टुडे वी आर गोइंग टू हैव अ डिस्कशन ऑन वन ऑफ द मोस्ट इम्पॉर्टेंट टॉपिक्स इन पाकिस्तान विच इज एजुकेशन। Lots of people lament the state of education, but our government continues to build roads and has little focus on education. Today I have four young people who are heavily involved in education research in Pakistan. I've seen their work, they think very well, and inshallah they will lead the debate on education in the country. They will pave the way where my generation has failed. So let me begin by getting them to introduce themselves. Nadia Naviwala, please introduce yourself.
Thanks, Nadeem. So my name is Nadia Naviwala. I am an American living in Pakistan, as most people pick up from my accent. I moved here 5 years ago, but I am Pakistani by background. My parents are from Karachi. And I'm currently a fellow with the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., and I work with the Citizens Foundation.
Thank you, Nadia. Nadia has written a number of very interesting articles claiming that we should not look at education spending and look at literacy rates. But we'll come to that during the course of the conversation. Now, let's go to Shahrukh Wani, who's also written a number of very interesting articles.
Hello, everyone. I'm Shahrukh Wani. I'm based out of Islamabad. I run Millennial PK, which is a policy blog which engages young people in public policy. I also have contributed to Daily Times and The Guardian. And I'm an incoming graduate student at the London School of Economics.
Excellent, Shahrukh. I've seen your work and enjoyed it. Now, go to Salman Ahmed.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, Salman, go ahead.
So I'm Salman Ahmed. I'm a co-founder of Peshawar 2.0, which is a social enterprise trying to promote entrepreneurship in Peshawar. And apart from that, I teach at the oldest institution of KP, Edwards College.
Great, great, wonderful. Glad to meet you. I believe education has made great strides in KP. We'll talk about that. Now let's go to Safian Jabbar.
I'm Safian, and I've been into education service delivery for the last 10 years. I've been one of the pioneer members for an initiative like ASA Pakistan, and then I've founded some of other accountability initiative, both in education sector, like tracking school grants and reforms with the aim to track budgets and spending, mainly driven by the donors. And these are the few areas that I've done and tracked over the years.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, folks. Okay, let's begin. All of you have a deep interest in education. All of you are contributing to education. Hearing what you guys are doing, I'm humbled. I think it's wonderful that you brought the things that you're doing. Let me begin by asking you first, what is the biggest challenge in education in Pakistan? Why is it that we have not been able to get hold of the problem? World Bank, DFID, USAID, everybody has pumped money into education. Yet, we seem to be at a standstill. Inertia has taken over our education system. So, Nadia, let's begin with you.
I would say, when I started investigating this question for Dawn, I told my editor, the answers are going to be really complicated. And what she said was, well, we should start by asking the right questions. And that's what was stunning to me in looking at education, is that we've been asking the wrong questions. And the problem has never been the budget, or at least for the past 5 years has not been the budget in education. The central problem is that our budget is going towards teacher salaries, but these teachers are not teaching in schools. And so our central challenge is getting teachers to teach, as far as the government school system is concerned.
Okay, so it's basically teachers should be teaching. Great. So let's go. Safian, what's your take on that? Oh, Safian, can you hear me? Okay, Salman, go ahead. Why don't you take it over?
Okay, so for me, one of the biggest problems that I think the education system in Pakistan have is curriculum. Mm-hmm. I think we have been unable to teach our kids the current, curriculum that is taught across the globe. And from my first-hand experience, I can tell you that the curriculum, the class experience, the things that we teach our kids are uninspiring. You know, they're not stimulating. They lack the, increased interest of the kids in their subjects. So for me, it's curriculum.
Okay, Salman. Oh.
Yeah.
Hello, Salman.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Your take.
Yeah. So. Okay. So for me, it's curriculum. I mean, there are a number of other issues which are, in one or the other way responsible for, like, transparency and accountability and, teachers training and their selection and, so many other things. But I think primarily it's the curriculum that is, I'll just give you a small example. The curriculum that we teach our kids, in computer sciences, mm-hmm. it is like at least 15 to 20 years old. I mean, the world has moved on and the things that we're teaching our kids are outdated.
Okay.
And I think the same is the case in other areas, in physics and chemistry and biology. The books are outdated. The curriculum is outdated. And we are talking about competing with the world with an outdated system. So that's,
okay.
for me, it's curriculum.
Yeah. Thanks, Safiyan. Let's go to Shahrukh.
Yeah, so for me, I think its central issue is the management of the education department itself. So from what I've been talking to teachers for the past few days, what they're saying is that there's very little accountability within the department, and I think that there's also very little accountability between the teachers and the parents. That's why we see the gap between the performance of private school teachers and the public schools. I think Nadia has written very brilliantly on this for the Woodrow Wilson Center too. So that's why parents, when they can afford to, they pull their children out of public schools, put them into private schools. Spending is now equal, I think, about $8 billion being spent in private education right now. So everything, I think, Sufiana is also right. But the problem essentially is that how we are governing the entire school system. It's too centralized. I was talking to this teacher in Punjab. The essence of his argument was this, that they don't really understand what's happening on the ground. Mm-hmm. They don't understand what's happening in Rodra. They don't understand what's happening in Miawali. So the problem essentially is how we are governing it. I believe that the public policy, the legislative MPs and everyone, I think the intentions are good. At least for the past decade, they have made effort to reform the system. As they say, road to hell is paved.
So basically what you're saying is that mm-hmm. it's decentralization that is the main problem. So we've got three viewpoints: teachers, decentralization, and curriculum. Now, Salman, how will you round it off? Okay.
Hello, could you hear me?
Yeah. Who is next? Is it Salman or Safiyan? Am I getting confused?
I'm done, actually. It's Safiyan's...
Okay, Safiyan, yeah. Then go.
Okay. I will try to add another dimension to what Shahrukh has said. Mm-hmm. To me, I feel there is a lack of capacity on the part of public sector education managers, there are many issues. Some of them has been elaborated by my fellow colleagues, but all of these conversation revolves around those managers who are actually managing. Whether we talk about the continuity of reforms, whether we talk about taking those reforms and taking benefit from the previously successful initiatives, like something has been and implemented in some province and it has producing good results, then it can be implemented in the in other provinces as well. But once something has not been able to produce result in one province and the other one is trying to implement those same reforms in the other provinces without taking in without considering the results and their implications, so I feel there are issues at the regarding the capacity of those public sector managers. Those are actually managing those whether reforms, whether they are trying to give some budget spending spending numbers for the year on years, and then like prioritizing their areas with respect to the funds available at hand.
To me, the
core is capacity of public sector education managers.
Okay. Listen, I think let me just sort of throw this in. I think all of you have a point, but let's step back a little. What is it that we want from our education system? I've found that all the people who want to do good in the country, who are really, really well-meaning, but they come from the upper class, they have no problem, they send their children to school in UK and US, and they are trying to fix the system in Pakistan. And whenever I've questioned them, they don't know what they want from them. What do we want from our education system? Are we clear on the objectives?
I don't think so. The problem is essentially we need to create, I think, in my opinion, we need to create better citizens. For me, simply the economic argument is not that much valid. I think you will disagree with me on this point. We need to create people who are engaged with the outside world better. Of course, they have to be literate at the very least, but they also have to become engineers and doctors and everything. But they also are voters, their parents, their brothers, their, all of these other social relationships too. So it's much more of a complicated issue. It's not simply an economic argument for me.
Okay. Anybody else? Who next?
Yeah, I would say if it's not, you know, citizenship is the objective of any functioning public education system. And universally, this comes up over and over again, whether it's from teachers, from politicians, from education experts. Where is the vision? What is the vision for this education system? Mm-hmm. It seems completely meaningless in terms of what it wants to produce. Mm-hmm. But citizenship is complicated, and we haven't been able to agree on that since 1947. So I think at a minimum, it's not jobs, but it's insaniyat. Like, we need people.
That's quite far. Okay. Guys, listen, let me step back a little. Yeah. Let me bring this in, then Sofyan and Salman, you can come in. I think citizenship, Nadia, you said it right. We've been chasing citizenship, and we've chased national interest. We chase everything under the sun. That's where madrasas are going to. They're trying to create good people and good citizens and good Muslims. I come from the Chicago tradition. As you know, I studied with Gary Becker. I believe education is a path to jobs. It is an investment in oneself. And you can see that in remittances, people are running around the world getting jobs. And why should education system not be focused on jobs? So go ahead, guys.
Well, I think that's part of the...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Sofyan.
First. Yeah, go ahead.
Sofyan, go. Or Salman, go.
Okay, it's Salman. It's Salman. So
sorry.
I think... Yes, partially yes. Mm-hmm. That's should be at the heart of the education system. I mean, getting jobs and, you know, the economic benefits. Mm-hmm. But I think at the same time, you need people who could think for themselves. So you need your education system to train independent thinkers. And also that the system could churn out graduates who could solve real life problems. I mean, you know, there are so many graduates I meet on a daily basis. They have degrees. But in their own domain, they cannot solve a single problem. Hmm. So I think that's one key issue that our education system needs to address. And that's something I personally want from, you know, our system to have this quality. That could train individuals to solve problems in their domain. Mm-hmm. They could, become independent thinkers. And in the process, they could earn, for their families.
Okay, Salman, go.
It was Salman.
To me, one of the initial goals from this current system we have, I think, are we producing the graduate who can actually compete in the global market, and afterwards we can actually, once we are competing with the international graduates, then we can actually follow our dream of citizenship to the level of Scandinavian countries and someone in the West. So I'm looking at producing graduate who can actually compete in the global market.
Okay. Yeah, no, I don't agree with that at all. I don't agree with it for the West or for Pakistan, especially for Pakistan. The argument of jobs is what's used to take the arts out of education in the West. In Pakistan, we don't even have jobs to prepare people for. People need to create jobs. So I think our education system needs to prepare people to be the best that they can be, including to be the most creative that they can be, so that they can create those opportunities for themselves. We don't have a job market to prepare people for. And when we speak about the, you know, global competitiveness and the global economy, we are not very well integrated with that economy. There are not call centers coming to Pakistan. And the labor that we export is unskilled, or it's labor. It's not the educated classes anymore as much. So I think that's why we need to prepare people to be the best they can be, to live the most fulfilled lives that they can, to reach their aspirations, and then they will be able to create those jobs and sources of income for themselves.
If I can add to that, I think there's no denying that we are part of a global economy right now. And, you know, ideas and jobs are not local anymore. And the things that we teach, you know, our kids to become entrepreneurs and solve the problems around them and then, you know, scale up those solutions. I think, you have to agree with me that, you know, we are part of the global economy and there's no denying that we have to compete on a global scale, which means our skills, our education has to be at par with what is taught in other, you know, developed countries. Yeah.
I think Nadia has perfectly put where my feelings on this debate lie. I disagree with you, Nadeem. Education is more than economics. It's not an just about getting the right job for the kid when he graduates high school or college. It's about investing in your social fabric. We can't reduce it to something so meaningless as a job. And I'm of that opinion that jobs of the future are, you can't train your kids in school or college for them. You cannot teach them the skills they will need in 20 years down the road. I'm all for liberal education. I know kids need to think critically. They need to think for themselves. And once you can teach them how to think for themselves and how to learn new skills, as they go in life, they will do that. And again, Nadia's exactly right that we're not integrated to the global economy to an extent too, but we want to go in that direction. But I believe that we need to invest in education, not because we want to, you know, create people who can get jobs, but to create good civic leaders, create good people, good social relationships. That's where I die on this one.
So this is very interesting. We've got a situation now where Nadia and Shahrukh feel that the social and the community goals are far more important for education. Although Nadia brought in a very interesting thing that we should not just think of jobs, we should also think of entrepreneurship. And these people must, in the future, because the economy is not producing enough jobs, they must think of entrepreneurship. But I would put it to you that they are already entrepreneurs because majority of them are going, not majority, but a large number of them are going overseas to get jobs. And that is a fairly entrepreneurial venture when you smuggle yourself into some other country and you fend for yourself and take a job. But let's leave that aside for a minute. Look, the central issue, it seems to be setting goals for education. And if we set goals for education, like you said, we set social goals for education. That means, and this is what Salman said earlier too, that somehow we must have a system that is well managed. We have to have capacity for it and that somehow we must try and get a uniform system of education around the country. Do you believe that the country should have a uniform system of education or should there be different system of educations prevailing in the country? For example, people, we can try different experiments. Quetta can have one experiment, Karachi can have one experiment, Peshawar can have one experiment. Why should we have a uniform system of education? Go ahead, Shahrukh.
I don't believe we should have uniform education systems. Everyone is different. So I think let people figure their own way. There are going to be private schools and public schools anywhere in the world. There will be madrasas where people are more inclined towards getting religious education. The argument of having something more uniform, I don't understand this. So because there are private schools, public schools have to be bad. That doesn't even make sense. So universities, NAST and LUMS, can also get students from government schools and private schools. There's no argument, there's no logic behind this argument. The only reason this argument stands is because our public education system is so poor. So, and that's where Pakistani elite has found a way out of it for their own kids, so they can send them to private schools. And that's a way for them to not take responsibility of the public education. That's an argument that which is valid. But apart from that, having a uniform system, I think it's too much of a... I have no other way to put it. It's a bad idea, for me at least. I would never like that.
I think, no, I did not say that there should be a uniform system. What I said was, what I tried to say was, I mean, the gap between all these different systems is, you know, quite huge. The graduate that comes out of a madrasa and then the graduate that comes out of LUMS or Beacon House, you know, the difference is immense. It's like two different worlds. So, you know, you put it rightly that we need to invest more in our government schools, bring them at par with the private schools, and the curriculum that is taught in those schools should be, you know, good enough, you know, as good as the one that is taught in these good schools. So, there is no question.
But then why should there be a centralized curriculum? If you want diversity in education, what role is there for a centralized curriculum? Why do all the education experts want a centralized curriculum to be given to all schools? Nadia?
I mean, I think the education system needs leadership. I think that can come from the federal government, and there needs to be a vision for why we're doing this, what it's supposed to achieve, and to resolve some of these very fundamental critical issues. Then after you have a vision, how schools implement it should be decentralized to the school level. And I mean, Ken Robinson puts this really well in a TED Talk, but that education is not about command and control, it's about climate control.
Very nice.
And so we need to allow school leaders and people who have, you know, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to passion and incentive to achieve something. And that shows up in schools more than anywhere else. And where people want to try something and do something, we need the experimentation. So let's give them the support to do it.
Yeah, so I agree with Nadia on this, and also Salman. So I think I agree with Salman that, yeah, you need to have better quality education in government schools. I'm not arguing against that. The problem is that too much of a centralized system, that's bad. And also curriculum being centralized is also bad. And I think language comes into this argument too. Should everyone study in English? Should everyone study in Urdu? Or let people who are comfortable speaking Pashto, let them study in Pashto or Sindhi or Balochi. I think we need to give people more choices when it comes to education system rather than take them away from them. So low-cost private schools have helped a lot of young people get an education when the public sector has failed to do so. So I think rather than taking things away, let's give them more options. And of course, quality control is very important. There has to be better public schools to allow greater social mobility for young people to move up the social ladder.
Look, I think I hear what you're saying, and this is all very good. The question is, if you have a centralized curriculum, and if you have these textbook boards who are producing, what amazes me is that none of you guys write a lot about education, none of you write about the textbook boards who are producing substandard textbooks that our local kids are forced to read, but the elite kids do not read them. Because there's kids in Edison College bypass those textbooks. So how much of the problem is the fact that we've got a highly centralized system where the Secretary of Education, one man, decides that what curriculum should be, and his compatriot, who is the chairman of the textbook board, decides what textbooks are going to be produced? Why don't we take Singapore's textbooks? Why don't we take textbooks from the rest of the world? Why don't I, if I'm the principal of the school, why can't I set the curriculum myself? What does the secretary know better than me? Tell me.
I agree with you, Nadeem, on this. We have too much of a centralized system, a top-heavy system. We like to put everything into structures, and teachers know best. They are the ones who are engaging the students day to day.
Yeah, but then we also do this. We knock on the poor teachers. I think the public sector teachers have become like a hobby horse for everybody to beat up on. You know, our friends, those Leaps people also beat up on them. They get paid more, etc., etc. Look, the point is the public sector teachers have no autonomy. They can be transferred whenever they like. They can their budgets are overly scrutinized or overly sort of ungenerous. And then they're given these crappy textbooks and they're given these crappy curriculum. Why should they even teach?
So actually, you're right. Is an issue that I didn't even look at when I spent a year investigating this. And it's because it's the most popular issue, and yet it's one that I don't think matters as much as we think it does. If kids in school are not literate, and I'm talking about grades 1 through 5 at the primary level, where most of kids in Pakistan who go to school or government schools are, if kids are not literate, then why does it matter what's in their books? So I think the fundamental issue is literacy. And the huge question to me is why a teacher cannot teach her kids, or why her students don't know how to spell Pakistan after they've been in school for 3 years. And she has been heavily trained to teach in Urdu, to teach in English, by Beacon House, by USAID, by everyone else. But in any case, I just don't think the curriculum is as important as we make it. That said, Punjab is doing its own textbooks. Basically, the federal level has abdicated on this and the provinces have taken over. So where they can in Punjab and KP, I think they are working on trying to do better textbooks. Sindh knows that the mafias control it and they can't touch the issue. So there is a textbook mafia that does need to be dealt with when we do get to this question at the secondary level.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if I can add.
Go ahead, Sofyan, go ahead.
Thank you, Nadeem, for summing up what I was trying to say. To me, system is that federal government put some national education policy on top of it, and then give some liberty to produce their own textbook, all of those provinces, and give some liberty to have multiple, like they have a choice to design their own delivery system, whether in conforming those national education standards. Whether service delivery is by the hands of private sector or the public sector, so they give them some liberty to implement whatever kind of service delivery of system they want, but they have some uniform national education standard. And then similarly, we have given an option to design their own service operations and delivery system, keeping in mind those national standards. And then give them a certain liberty to produce their own textbook books or adapt textbook boards from some other countries, keeping in mind that we have some national standards on top of it. If textbooks used in Singapore conform those national standards, like any service delivery manager, whether sitting in private sector schools or government sector school, will be allowed to use those books. In case you can't go to Singapore, at least they have the liberty to use books produced in Karachi or in Peshawar, conforming those standard educational standards can be used in Punjab, Quetta, Multan, somewhere.
Please, let me say this. When I was a kid, the reason that I escaped was because I didn't have to use the textbook board books. We used all the foreign textbooks that we could. And honestly, that's how my generation escaped bad education. The question really is, and I think Nadia, you said this about teacher training. Let me ask all of you, can you put yourself in the shoes of a local teacher? Can you imagine yourself as a teacher in a public school, let's say in Peshawar, or let's say in Lorelei or something? How would you feel about this nonsense that USAID comes and trains you, so-and-so gives you a curriculum, so-and-so gives you this direction, so-and-so gives you the... All you have to do is stand there in class and follow somebody else's direction. You have no room for creativity. You have no room for thought. And you're asking this person to communicate creativity, critical thinking and things to his own students. I don't think that's likely to happen. Tell me, Shahrukh.
Yes.
So I think it goes to the essence of the argument, is that our government as a whole is too centralized, and that's my opinion. Until you have a strong district level governments who can, you know, that's the level in which teachers can engage with. So there was a teacher who was messaging me, and I think I posted on Twitter that they were saying the same thing, that people in Lahore do not understand what's happening in Mian Valley. And that's right. And you can't expect people in Lahore to understand what's happening in Mian Valley either, right?
Absolutely.
So I think at the essence, you can't have this sort of a system. Let districts run their governments, decentralize the education system to them. Let them give them flexibility on what they want to teach to their kids. Have some sort of
a standard. Sharuk, I would say even the district is too big. Let every school be an experiment. No, let every school try and do what it wants to do. This is what Ken Anderson is saying.
The problem with that argument, is the capacity problem will come into it, because a lot of districts are very low income. So we tend to do things very without thinking things through. So we need to decentralize this quite slowly, and we need to allow for districts like lower income districts in South Punjab, in the sense, to build their capacity first. So we can't just give them the entire education system overnight and let them run it. And that's also a big problem. So we can't have that, but we need to move into that direction. So I agree with you, Nadeem, on this argument. The essence of the problem is management. It's better management. Managers will also let them study foreign books. I have never studied Pakistani textbook in my life. So I agree with you on this.
I think it's interesting that you can take the same young woman or man, government teacher, and put them in a private system and get completely different outcomes. And so I think we need to look at what, I agree with you. I mean, first of all, there's not much happening in government schools, but the reasons behind it are that the teachers are faced with, you know, multi-grade teaching, and they don't have the support they need. So I think we need to look at the incentives around them, or the disincentives that are leading to the situation we have.
So, okay, Salman,
Yeah, so I just like to add a small point to what Nadia said earlier. I think literacy is important. Yes, there's a lot of debate around literacy, but I think we need to sort of take this debate forward and think about those kids which are already in school, and how do we improve their experience. So when I teach to university students, and there are, you know, students sitting in the class from various backgrounds and different schools, so the difference between a kid, you know, who is from a good background, from a and has studied in a government school, and a kid who is also, you know, from the same background but has studied in a low cost private school, you know, the way they present themselves, the things that they know, there's a huge difference in their levels. So I think what we need to talk about is, you know, how do we improve the experience, the way they are taught. I mean, you just mentioned that you put a government school teacher in a private school and the results are completely different. But I think there has to be something different which is happening in those low-cost private schools. Why don't we learn from their experience and, you know, apply those lessons in government schools?
So let me clarify real quick, and I think what I found, what a lot of people don't realize, is that I'm talking about literacy of children in school. So I'm concerned with kids who have been in school for 3 to 5 years and are illiterate. So in Pakistan, half of your third graders, actually less than half of third graders, can read a sentence in Urdu after 3 years of school. After 5 years of school, when most of your kids have dropped out, among those that are left, only a little over half can read a paragraph in Urdu. Mm-hmm. So unless you're achieving, if you could just achieve literacy for children who go to school for years, our society would just be so much farther ahead. And then those kids would be equipped to study other subjects, to study further on. I mean, a lot of people I speak to say we've even overcomplicated our primary school system, the curriculum for it. If we just focused on literacy and numeracy, that's really all we need to achieve among kids who are of that age.
Okay, let me raise this with you too. Sorry, go ahead. Who was saying that? Salman?
So one of the solutions to low achievement of outcomes in very early age kids is that, you know, when there was this study, I can forward to you. There was this intervention where the community and parents were involved more in the governance of their school, just like you mentioned, that you know, we need to treat these schools as experiments. So when the parents and community involvement in the governance of the schools increased, at the same time, the outcomes, the achievement of those outcomes and the literacy of students also, you know, increased. So I think you're right, you know, in saying that we need to decentralize our schools, you know, involve the parents and the community more in the governance of the schools, and that will lead to, you know, better literacy rate of the kids who go to those schools.
I think it's a myth that this is a problem that can be solved by parents and by communities. There has been a lot of money, pretty much everything invested in getting parents to be involved into fixing the governance problem. And it's just not a demand side problem. I think it's a supply side problem. People do want things to be better. They often live in small communities where they can intervene and they can be involved. We have parent teacher committees. We've done all this. It may have worked in some places, but I don't think we can let the government and the governance off the hook.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so I think, Nadia, I would want you to comment on this too. So do you really think these parents are empowered in taking action on how, what kind of education these schools are giving to their kids, right? So my argument is that you need to empower parents more. You need to empower the communities more. I agree with Sulman on this point. We can't have this sort of a system in which a bureaucrat decides everything. School boards, we have them in the US, right? So similar to that, I think Nadia can tell better in this. Are parents truly empowered in these examples you're given?
Okay.
There are parent-teacher committees. How they function varies, but a lot of money has been put into mobilizing them. Parents demand education in this country. That's why we have 40% of kids in private schools. I don't think they're stupid. Like, I don't think it's an issue of empowering them or having them, you know, get involved in these small community schools at all.
Safiyan, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. Just listening to conversation here, I can tell you, I have seen all those systems introduced in Pakistan somewhere in some kind or the other. For example, like I have done quite some work on education committees, I can tell you the problem that I see is the capacity from a public sector education managers to enable those actually committees. For a minute, you don't see a word of board member for a school, but they are actually acting as a board member of school, or the purpose is there to act as a board member for a particular school. But the only issue comes is our system is such that our manager who actually oversees those committees don't have the capacity, and he's not aware what actually is required from them. So they are not actually letting them know what actually is required from them. That is why the question is, we have all those initiatives. But the problem comes how we are implementing it in this part, like here in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So I'm again revolving around those capacities, those willingness to give some more powers, more in the shape of, like, we want decentralization, but at the same time we don't want to give some release more powers or responsibility to the lower level. Like, we want district education authorities, but we don't want to give them more power so they can act. Similarly, district authorities want to notify school education committees, but they are not interested to give more power so that they can take their own decision at school level. So we are trying to achieve decentralization without giving due powers or required powers to those at the lower level. So whatever we are discussing is revolving at the end of the argument comes how our school education managers are actually achieving those objectives.
So you're saying it's a total mess, huh? Okay, Nadia, Shahrukh, I think you wanted to say something.
Just one comment. I think I agree with Safran on this. We need to build accountability, and accountability comes through empowering the right people. And Nadia said something before. I think I would like to elaborate on that, and I want you all to talk about it. We have overcomplicated this a bit, especially at primary level. We have too many subjects. We have too complicated mess. We teach, I think Aisha Jalal at a literary festival I heard once said, okay, that we ask kid in first or second grade to start learning Islamiyat and Pakistan studies and this and that and this and that. That overcomplicates it. So I think we need to focus more on the basic skills these kids need. And I would love if Nadia would elaborate on that.
And sorry, I was just going to say on the parents thing, I think we're talking about different things. We need to be clear about what do we want parents to change in a school. And so right now they have devolved small budgets down to the parent teacher council level. And that's where there may have been some problems in implementation. So these parent teacher councils can make a decision to make small repairs on the school or buy materials. But on the other hand, if we want to say that parents can make teachers in school teach more effectively or actually do their jobs, I think there are enough frustrated parents in Pakistan to demonstrate that they can't do that. If they know that the school is not doing what it's doing because not doing what it's supposed to do because there's no teaching happening at all. And that's where you see a lot of frustration and parents will opt out and go to a private school if they can. But on the other hand, sometimes parents are not literate enough to assess what's going on in the school. And that actually comes up more in the private school system.
Let me sum it up this way. It's very interesting where we got to right now. That A, we seem to have a school system that is really inertia. It has no management systems in place. It seems to be running on public sector lines in the sense that the centralized government controls everything. We set up experiments as donor wants them. Donor wants to come along like USAID, or if it comes along, wants to do teacher training. Sure, we do teacher training. We send bodies to teacher training, bodies who may not be interested, but they get some allowance, so they go to teacher training. But when they come home, the conditions are the same, so why should they take an interest? They are unmotivated because they have no control over curriculum, they have no control over books, they have no control over anything. They are supposed to produce results for a distant system, and that's kind of, I personally wouldn't be able to work in that environment. I'd be very, very unmotivated. The parent-teacher bodies are set up, but they're set up because the donor said so, and the secretary is not interested in the parent. Everything goes to the secretary. The parent-teacher body can repair the bathroom a little bit or do this a little bit. In any case, the parents mostly are illiterate, and we also have studies in the West that we've seen that it is really the literate parents who, the achievement of the school kids follow the achievement of their parents. So educated parents produce better kids, even in the West, right? So that issue remains there. Now let me take you in another direction. Yes, okay, the system is failing. So the system is bad. And, you know, and I think what you say about literacy, Nadia, I buy that. But I also don't buy it because I see also that when these people need literacy, they acquire it very quickly. Like when they go overseas, I've seen uneducated people go to England, for example, they're sitting in Bradford, and they've acquired enough literacy that they can work. So the issue is really that what do we do about the system? My suggestion to you is perhaps we are doing it the 19th century way. Perhaps, as you brought in Ken Robinson into this, Nadia, perhaps we are doing it the 19th century way, a schoolhouse and the teacher and, you know, all that. Why don't we bring technology into it? Why don't we let the Khan Academy go to every school? Instead of giving laptop to every school, just put the Khan Academy in every school. Let the kids listen to Khan Academy. I think we will get more bang out of that. Or as I wrote once when I was doing the framework of economic growth, and I've sent you that article, why don't we build community centers instead of schools? Why don't we think out of the box? Why must we continue to follow the 19th century model? I asked you that.
No, you're absolutely right. I think, so I agree with you that we, in places where you have weak teachers, you can circumvent them with the types of things you're talking about. But I don't know if we can do it everywhere. Punjab and KP have set up these kind of solar-powered labs You could use that and you'd have the electricity and the internet to do this type of thing. But your most marginalized schools are remote, far-flung. They're in mountains in KP. They're hard to reach in Balochistan. And these are places where you're not going to have the electricity and the internet to do it. But we could think about using radio, which other countries have done. The other thing is that's very interesting, but the KP does non-formal schools, which only teach literacy and numeracy. And they're supposed to be for girls, but realistically, about a third of the students are boys. And these schools are doing better than the government schools. And this is a much more simplified curriculum because it's just literacy and numeracy. You don't have the infrastructure there. And yet these kids are doing better. So yeah, non-formal might be the way to go. And it's a way to circumvent these curriculum battles that we keep having.
Hello, who wants to go next, Shahrukh?
I agree with Nadia 100%. I think we need to simplify stuff. We have overcomplicated everything in the society. I think we are aware of the Master Ayub example in Islamabad, the guy who runs a school at a park, the firefighter. Mm-hmm. And his kids do pretty well too, because it's simplified, sort of an informal environment. So I think that, again, we are too hell-bent at having everything done in the way everyone else is doing. I think we need to find local solutions to the local problems. I agree with Nadia on this.
Okay. Okay, but tell me, why are you guys averse to having a community center instead of schools? Put in Khan Academy there. Eliminate this nonsense about having a school with a schoolhouse of the 19th century variety where things happen for 4 hours and then kids go home and, you know, forget everything. Because remember, the home environment is very important, as I've told you. Studies show again and again, home environment is very important. The second thing is that, for God's sakes, we also send kids to school. Nadia, you're complaining about literacy. But think about it. I gained most of my literacy through libraries. What I learned in school, if I didn't have anything to read at home, I would not be literate at all. Right? And I think that may be a problem. We have no libraries. We have no supporting structures for schools. We just send kids to school with this bad textbook produced by the textbook board. And you expect them to achieve something. I find that bizarre. And you guys are not taking that up at all. Tell me.
I think, let me just come in for a minute. I think I agree with Nadim on this. Yeah. Education is more than schools. It's about the environment you're building. And we need libraries for that. We need a culture of education for that. In Pakistan, we don't have that. I love reading books, and I can't find library, and it's very expensive to buy books all the time. And my parents get really angry about that. And someone with even lower, less income would find it virtually impossible to do. So I think that's a very is the right argument to have at this point. But as far as Khan Academy is concerned, I think it's a very good tool, but I don't think it can replace teachers. That connection has to be made between the students and teachers on a personal level. I have learned the best when I connect with a teacher individually, and I see and that ignites my interest. Khan Academy, I don't think will be able to do that for the majority of the population.
I think the idea of a community center is a very interesting one, because, you know, I come from a rural area in Charsadda. And when I was a kid, I used to see these schools operating from, you know, different masjids. And there used to be a government teacher. And it used to be a government center where kids from the different communities would come there. And now when I recall those kids, I think they were at par with private schools of that time. And the study that Nadia referred to, you know, that's a very interesting study. I heard about it a few days back, and the results of those community schools where there is only one teacher teaching, you know, a couple of subjects to kids from a community, and the results are better than the one, you know, better than the government schools.
Okay.
And the teacher in those schools are, you know, just one teaching to all kids. That's the interesting part. In a government school, there are,
I think, again, let me, I'm going to insist on this a little bit. The point is that I think we still are thinking in the 19th century model that the teacher is central to education, right? Now with technology here, for example, I know of systems. I have people I know very well who have made systems, computer-based systems for education and learning. which are far better. And I don't know whether you've heard about this Khan Academy guy's TED Talk. You know, he talks about it, how we need to invert the schoolroom. And Ken Robinson talks about it too, that why should it, the schoolroom be so dependent on the teacher, right? Why should kids not learn from video lectures and be able to ask the teacher a question? Right, I think can't we invert the classroom in Pakistan? Why don't we bring in computer-based learning instead of still thinking about the 19th century teacher and schoolroom story with all kinds of things? I think donor consultants love that story because it keeps them in business. Now, why are you young people backing that story?
The brick and mortar system is old, and you know we're moving. We should be moving forward. I mean, there are so many different apps and so many different platforms which are gamified. The learning outcomes in those gamified systems are quite high as compared to our classrooms. The feedback, you know, the kid receives is immediate. That's one of the key elements for a good education system. The feedback that a kid receives in our traditional system is at the end of the year when they go into an exam. Whereas we could reduce that time through technology. You know, all those gamified systems, the feedback loop is, you know, very frequent, very quick, very immediate. And the learning outcomes, is quite good. So yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely agree with you. We just, finished our cycle where we incubated three education startups who are working in these areas in incorporating technology in education, and we are hoping that those three solutions would have some good results in the days to come.
Nadeem, where would you get the electricity and internet to do this over Pakistan?
Look, Nadia, again, I think this is, I've talked about it a lot, that we are always thinking of the marginal student and pitch everything at the marginal person. For example, we are fascinated by rural areas and that we must make sure that everything is driven by the rural areas. So rural areas are what? Something way out there in the northern mountains of Gilgit. Hey, I don't care about them. Let them come to Lahore or Peshawar or Karachi. I am focused on getting the cities to work. That's where 75-80% of populations live. I want those guys to be upgraded. Then the rural areas will get upgraded. But we should not think about the rural areas first. If they don't have electricity, fine. They want to enjoy the countryside. Let them live in the countryside. Right? The point is, anybody who wants to make a life has to come to the city. And the city is where I would focus. That this is where we have to get the school system going. Getting a bunch of generators is so cheap. I can put in a generator in every community center. I don't want crummy teachers. I don't want a crummy classroom. I want a community center. The advantage of the community center is I will also get parents to come in. I will also get the family to come in.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the cost of building a small school in a rural area, you know, if by conservative estimates, it would be at least ₹1 million. Mm-hmm. You know, having a single room, a toilet, having furniture, and all those things, all the basic amenities. So I think if we could invest that much money in that school, buying a generator is not that difficult. So yeah, you know, we should start with urban centers. And if you are talking about rural areas and compromising on all those kids who are going, you know, to schools in urban areas and in cities, I think that's going to have a bad impact on the current education system, because you're talking about the 25% and leaving out the 75%. Yeah, I agree with you.
I disagree with you, Nadeem, on this. I think we love innovation is fine. I co-run an accelerator program too, so it's fine. We need innovative solutions to a lot of things, but we cannot underemphasize the importance of teachers in schools. 19th century has produced a lot of good things too. I'm not saying that we need to do everything exactly like that, but we can't take that sort of a school environment out either. We can compromise. Okay. Who can afford, you can go to a private school, have that school environment for the poor kids. We can have like a video or a radio or something for them. We need a teacher who can really make that personal connection with the students. It's not, innovation has its merits, but that shouldn't substitute that teacher-student relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are different.
I think we should not, what I'm talking about is not entirely replacing a teacher, but using technology to add and help a teacher. and an existing system, somehow incorporating in a manner that the output is, you know, better than what we have right now.
So what happens with these systems is that the teacher becomes a facilitator. So in KP, they are doing this with these smart boards. I think they are. They want to add a lot of videos and different ways of conveying concepts to children. But I think if we're, these are very different conversations if we're not agreeing on universal basic primary education. So I think, I mean, it's an interesting question. Do schools and cities have more resources that we can be leveraging that we're not even thinking about because we're obsessed with, you know, far-flung villages? That's a valid question. But at the same time, I think you could, rather than compromising on the 75%, we could look at this another way, which is that the smartphones are spreading in Pakistan. And I think soon they will be far more prevalent, even in farther areas. And even now, instead of computers, kids are using in, say, madrasas that are in village, or that are farther away, maybe in villages, they're using smartphones. But you can't navigate the smartphone without literacy. So this gets me back to the original point, which is that we need to equip children with literacy, and then they will be able to navigate a world of resources. And as those resources become more accessible to them, thanks to the market. Reading Room Project is working on this in Karachi, where they have a digital computer center with electricity, with internet, and they learn that they can't just teach kids to navigate the internet. The kids need literacy first, and they need it in English. So how do you get an Urdu-speaking child to English literacy and then to be able to navigate digital tools in the internet?
Okay, Safiyan, you want to go on this? Okay, Shahrukh.
Yeah, so I think I agree with the smartphone thing too. So it's very important to bring in new technology. Nadeem, I think you touched upon this. The majority of learning I have done in my life is also outside of classrooms. Once you are literate, of course, that's very important. That's if you can't read and write, this the conversation ends there. Once you have done that, then a lot of things you learn is from reading books. And for, again, I will come to the environment argument. We need to create an environment of learning, more libraries, more events in which young people are engaged with reading and writing and thinking critically about the world around them. So it's learning is much more complicated than education. It's a much broader argument.
That's a very important point to remember. And Nadia, you're right about literacy. But again, I suggest that literacy is the easiest to achieve through computer learning. You don't need a teacher for literacy. Literacy is best achieved through playing around on a computer game or something. And I tell you, as I said, I have a friend in Singapore who's got a company knowledge platform, and he actually does it. He's now got, called me up the other day, and he said there are about 80,000 students in Pakistan who are now following his system. It's a computer-based system where even the teacher is graded, the student is graded, Goals are achieved on a weekly basis, and if students don't progress on those goals, they go back. So I think we are missing out on a big thing by not applying technology there. But let me take you in another direction, which is also
okay.
Very important.
Okay.
Let's look at higher education. Sorry, go ahead, Safiyan. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just to add into your conversation regarding setting up citizen or the community center for the good learning one. Actually, the system don't encourage such thing. Let me tell you, there is an intervention funded by plan on a huge scale. People in different villages were asked to use their own drawing room and set up an ECE, early childhood center, train 10, 15 kids and prepare them for 2 years and then send them into the mainstream education system. Mm. Right? They have implemented this whole initiative in 3-4 districts of South Punjab. And more than 600 plus centers were set up with the help of local a person who is hardly middle or the matric level matriculation certificate. So and it was implemented for 2 years, and afterwards children were supposed to be mainstream into the school systems, whatever the public sector systems have. But the problem, it comes after 2 years. Many of our current public sector Punjab education system, it actually discourages such initiative. Like, for example, if someone, a parent, let's forget about the community center, a parent work with his child, a mother or a father work with his child with the help of technology and his own skill and prepare a child for 2-3 years. And after 3 years, he wants to wants his kids to be enrolled in the mainstream classroom. And he wants to be sit in the class 3 or class 2 level based on whatever the skills imparted during the last 2-3 years for which he was trained at home. Will that education system adopt this kid? Or they encourage parents to come, okay, you are coming, your kid have that much level of skill and quality of education imparted at home.
Okay. Look, I hear what you're saying, but the key issue is what Shah Rukh has been saying all along. I don't think we value education. So from here, I want to segue into higher education. I'll tell you why. Because I have always felt, for example, that we in this country revere people who are uneducated. I remember a long time ago, on the 14th of August, I was in Pakistan, and I remember going along the streets, it was a big celebration, and there were all kinds of posters about our national heroes. Who were our national heroes? Some sportsmen and some army people. Our national heroes are not learned. So our national heroes are people who are basically army people and sportsmen. We don't value any educated person. For example, you will never see on 14th August anywhere educated people like professors. Like, we've got tons of people outside the country or who are serious researchers who've done serious work. For example, this woman who's in this physics project that the CERN project, she's sitting at MIT, she's done a great job. Or other people also, I can cite many people who've done very good job, but we don't celebrate those people. In Pakistani universities, we never hire the best people. We have an aversion to merit everywhere in the country, and this shows up the best in our universities. For example, you will not see our universities hiring the best people. You will see people here hiring our best people, but not our universities. Our universities also run like schools, because they're run by the Secretary of Higher Education. They're not decentralized. I keep asking my friends who are well-educated. None of them are on university boards. University boards have secretaries, judges, and all kinds of things, but not educated people, right? So this, in this mess, what should I tell my poor kid in Pakistan? Hey, you study, what will you become? You become a good citizen? What does a good citizen mean? You guys pressed good citizen. A good citizen, one of my friends says in Pakistan, a good citizen, yes, create a good citizen for schools. What is a good citizen? A good servant for me. Is that what you guys are asking for? A good servant for everybody? And not any higher education, good people that can go ahead and be a beacon and say, hey, Pakistan is winning a Nobel Prize. Pakistan is, you know, for example, the only Nobel Prize winner that we had in physics, Abdul Salam. We never give him any credence, never give him any importance. So what do I tell my kids? Don't study physics. Don't become a Nobel Prize winner. How do you contend with that?
I think you're exactly right. Our higher education system is even, to some extent, is more messed up. For the past few months, we did a series online, the Beyond Classroom, and for that I met a number of people who teach at universities. Mm-hmm. And the argument there was that we're not getting the right kind of people, kids from schools. So there's a trickle-up effect of sorts with students. So if students are not learning basic skills in schools, how will they be able to learn critical and analytical ability in universities? But I agree with you on this. The universities need to be operated individually, like they're in the U.S., the private universities. They have boards, they have senates. Let them run their own management, let them build their own financial endowments, and let them do their own job. But for universities, we need a lot of money. not so much money for schools. I think universities need a lot of money to function. They need money for research. We spend, I think, about $700 million on higher education. In comparison, we're spending about just under $2 billion on a train in Lahore. So our priority is not there at all. So university presidents, they told me that we are concentrated too much on lower education. They have their own grievances on this. Okay.
The problem, I think, is quite simply the way that our university system came about. Pervez Hoodboy speaks very well about this, about how, Musharraf wanted to expand universities, and therefore our higher education, just mushroomed. And with that mushrooming and just creating all the, we needed professors all of a sudden. So dissertations were, plagiarized and doctored. People got money for publishing in journals, and then you had fake journals. And the whole thing, because of the mushrooming, the quality and the standards just disappeared. And that should be a lesson for us. I think now the kids who are better, and I taught in a university, are the ones who in some way are incredibly self-motivated and are in some way escaping the system because of their self-motivation and because they find their own resources. But either way, at the end of the day, there aren't jobs for these people. And so there is a broken link between excelling even in a university system, and then from there, becoming a lot of these types of people, intellectual heroes that you named, Nadim. There are more broken links when you look at that.
Yeah. I think that would be a separate, a long discussion for higher education, because there are so many issues and so many problems specifically in higher education. Dr. Hoodboy yesterday wrote an article on the number of PhDs and we're producing and the number of papers we're publishing every year, with more and more focus turning to our graduate and distributing PhDs and having lesser focus So how can you expect a professor who's paid to publish a certain papers, whose job would be evaluated well in the class? That's one broken link right there. In my experience, when I was doing my master's recently, so many of my teachers who were teaching us, they were TTS professors on payroll of HEC. And, it was a compulsion for them to publish two or three research papers every year. And their performance would be evaluated based on those research papers. And, a very, very small fraction of their evaluation would come from, their teaching assignment in the
Okay, go ahead, Safiyan.
Referring to this.
There's too much noise here.
I think it's coming from Safiyan.
Okay.
Yeah, problems of the university are rooted in your primary school system. Even if a kid gets through university, they're not critical thinkers. They can't express themselves clearly. They can't write clearly. And those are the types of skills that you need for them to be successful later in life. And a lot of this confusion is happening because of language. I remember one student said to me, "Ke, we ghar mein hum Pashto bolte hain, school mein Urdu, or per university mein aake English." And so it's no wonder that a lot of the papers that I got when I was teaching were all plagiarized, copy-pasted from the internet. But these kids couldn't do any better if I asked them to write an English paper at the master's level in an international relations program.
But Nadia, the kids I teach, even the ones who know English and are coming from good schools, even they cannot write two lines on their own. They're not independent thinkers. Language alone does not teach you to be independent thinker.
Let me come in here a little bit. Nadia, you said that, I think Shahrukh, you said that we need funding for universities. I think we have more than enough funding for universities. I don't think we need any more. I think our funding is going into brick and mortar, and that's all. We are building more and more buildings. We don't hire professors. There is not a single university in the country that has enough professors to even fill one department. I keep telling them, you don't deserve the name of a university. We have hundreds of acres of land for every university. And they don't use that land well. They don't know how to use that land. They're only using that land to build their houses on. So quite frankly, and I'll tell you another thing which is very important. I go around Pakistan, I go around saying I'm willing to give extracurricular lectures free. Universities are very resistant to that idea. They don't like extracurricular lectures because they want to create a monolithic, hierarchical system for their own personal benefits. The university administration, as you saw in Mashal Khan's case, they didn't want a dissenting voice. They got him killed because our universities are becoming rent-seeking mafias because we've given them large pieces of land which they are using for their personal ends. Which university, tell me, which university in Pakistan operates more than 6 hours a day? Have you ever seen a university in the West operate for 6 hours a day? Here, universities operate for 24 hours a day. So how do we deal with this? This is a simple management issue.
I agree with you to an extent. The spending thing, the best universities in Pakistan, according to international rankings, they're LUMS, Aga Khan University, and the most innovative ones like Habib University, whose president I met last month, they're all funded privately. So the government does not give them money. The IGC does not give them enough money or any significant portion.
Let me correct you a little
bit.
They're all funded privately, and they're the best universities, but they don't even come in the first 600 in the world.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that.
And they are also run like private enterprise. They're not run like universities in the West. All of them have their own set management.
I agree with you, but they have managed to do better than the public ones, right? So at the very least, they are, better than the rest, even if they're not of international quality, but they have somehow been able to graduate better alumni, right? And the argument with the Habib University's president, and he also said that HEC does not help assist private universities in any manner. And by private, I'm not talking about for-profit, by the way. LUMS and Aga Khan and Habib, they're not for-profit. They're non-profit universities. They're run by foundations. But yeah, I agree that there is a
I don't
role,
agree.
Okay.
I don't agree.
But
look,
we have a disagreement.
Shahrukh, you must understand, for-profit does not mean that you pocket a profit. Right? If you are getting non-financial benefits from a university that, hey, I'm now the rector, I'm the vice chancellor, I have this major profile as being the higher education, that is also a profit that you're getting. Not-for-profit universities were what I submit to you, and I wrote this article a long time ago, I'll talk to you about it. John D. Rockefeller set up the University of Chicago, my university. Yeah. That was not for profit. He gave the money and he never went there. It didn't have his name. He was not on the board. He was not the rector. He was not the vice chancellor. That is not for profit. When you are sitting there and you're getting all kind of social benefits from it, that is not for profit. That is for profit.
I believe there's a merit to that argument. I won't disagree with you that there are a lot of people who will do it just for putting the name on it on the board and having that sort of influence. But at the end of the day, the money has to come from somewhere. If the government spends $700 million, that's it, on higher education, $200 million goes into infrastructure building for the education, higher education department, building universities and new campuses, then where will the money come from? $700 million is not enough to run a higher education sector for the entire 200 million people in the country. We graduate more than 500,000 young graduates, and they're not learning skills from public universities either. I will give you an example. In Karachi, there was a student from a well-known university, an engineering student. I went to a vocational training institute there, and he was getting a six-month certificate after getting a degree in engineering, a bachelor's degree in engineering. And I asked him, why would you do that? And the argument was simple, because in 4 years of getting that bachelor's degree at a public university, I learned nothing, neither soft nor hard skills. He cannot write an essay, nor he understands engineering properly, but he graduated. So the argument is in public versus private. I think money will have to come from somewhere. And if private universities, if people want their name out there, they want their name on the board, they do it everywhere in the world. And that gives them a bit of influence, but it graduates few good alumni. I think that's expense to pay for it.
Okay. Anyone else wants to comment on this? So,
yeah. So even if we increase the budget in the current scenario, I don't think it will have any impact on the quality of education. I mean, look at all the government universities that the previous government created in KP in the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, most of those universities were used as, for employment of their, you know, political workers. So even if you increase funding for those universities, I don't think it will have any impact on the quality of education. Majority of these government universities are in one or the other way becoming more and more like PIA or, you know, some of those institutions, government institutions, which are becoming a burden on the economy. I mean, the impact they're creating, when we look at the cost and benefit analysis of these universities the government has created. So I think the governance of these universities need to improve drastically. The selection of the professors, according to a certain criteria, and then the teaching methodology that is used in the class, the curriculum that is taught in those universities. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of universities outside Pakistan, who bring in their their funding. I was on a course in Australia just recently, last month, and there was this department in the university which was responsible for commercializing all this research the university was producing. and they were earning, they were bringing in around $5 to $6 million per year. And it was getting very less amount of money from the government. So unless we somehow put these restrictions and compulsions on these universities that, okay, you're getting a certain amount of money from the government treasury and the government pocket, and you're responsible for, raising money and raising funds through projects and through, okay, so many different things. Yeah. Okay. I don't think things will improve any time sooner.
Sufyan?
Salman.
Oh, Salman, sorry. Go ahead. No, Sufyan. Sufyan, do you want to say anything next? Okay, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just referring to this article written by Hood by. The problem that I see was that we ask them to research for publication instead of do some research for innovation or the projects or get some projects. Mm. If we can tie this one, how many grants or the project you won independently while staying inside the university, that will help to me some kind of problem there. Instead of writing paper for publishing it, someone should also include the writing research or doing innovation project do some kind of innovative solution to existing problem will solve what kind of issues raised by Dr. Fudbai. That was what I would like to add into.
If I can respond to that, there either HEC through a notification created Office of Research, Innovation and Commercialization across all government universities. And they were given funds as well. And it's their job to actually commercialize the research of those faculty members. And just like Sufyan said that, rather than having just publications, why not do researches to solve local problems? And, in the process, commercialize those researches. And the output, the impact so far has been zero.
My friends, I don't understand why you are surprised.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Hmm? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is the wrong way to do it. HEC doesn't have to issue notification. Why is HEC issuing notification? It can regulate and maintain quality of universities and degrees, but it is not. Let universities decide what they want to do. Let every university get an independent board. Let them raise their own money. Give them grants, those who are struggling. But make them show. Let them decide what kind of centers and departments they want to form.
I think this illustrates the fundamental problem that we have in our education system, and that we've been kind of dancing around in this episode. What we've got is a situation where we are trying to, and this is not our fault, the donors are also trying to do it, we are trying to do it, our intelligentsia has caught up in it. We want to create yesterday's system of education. We want to create a 19th century system of education, which is based on students being just an idle, like a machine or something, some commodity that we can influence and judge. Teachers are also kind of passive. curriculum is something that we decide, management is something we decide centrally, obviously we are not getting any outcomes. I suggest that we need to think out of the box. We need to recreate an imaginative system for education. If you want that system to do research, it must first of all be a creative, innovative system. It's not that AGC can issue in, notices and get it done. A system which has no professors is not capable of doing research. I submit to you that's a fundamental proposition. Right now, none of our universities have professors, period. Even Lum's, our best university, has 15 professors. 15 professors is not a university. 15 professors in one department makes one department, even a small department. We need more professors. That means if we need to hire professors from overseas. In the US, there are no university has only American professors. More than 60% of the professors are foreigners. We need to do something like that. We need to think out of the box, or we need to use technology. Now, the issue is, if you're not thinking out of the box, if we don't have innovative education systems, let's not expect results. The results are going to be the same. So, okay, let's bring this to a close. What are your last concluding statements? Because I think we've gone on for a long time. We don't want too long a podcast that people don't listen to. I think it's been an interesting discussion. So can we start concluding statements? Nadia?
Sure. You know, at the end of this a panel discussion like this that I had, somebody came up to me and said, well, what can I do? And for me, my solution, and I think a resource that cities have that other parts may not as much as elites. And so I'm right now actually talking to the Islamabad city authority about starting a volunteer program for elites to teach regularly in government schools, because we have plenty, especially women, unfortunately, who have idle time on their hands. And I hope from that, you know, my people will come up with different solutions, different perspectives, different ideas that will feed a more meaningful debate about education in this country.
Go ahead, Sufyan.
So, to me, the mess is created because same person is making the policy and interfering in the operations. Like HEC is making the policy and then interfering in the operations of universities. Similarly, education secretaries are there to make policies, but they are more interested in interference with the operation
Good
of
point.
School system.
Mm-hmm.
That is
mm-hmm.
that
Good
is
point.
All.
Excellent. Shahrukh.
Yeah, so I think there are two main, we can summarize this in two sentences. First is the management itself, whether that's universities or schools. We need to look into a more decentralized way to run this system. HSE cannot in any circumstance, in any logical argument, run universities or allow direct university to do something. So we need to understand that. And the second is, of course, we need a culture of learning. I think we don't have it. And library is something that's really sticked out when Nadeem, you said this. Mm. We need more libraries. We need more people who understand what really learning is. Mm. And that's more than just being literate. Mm. And I think that's the argument.
Wonderful. Salman.
Yeah. So for me, if you want our education to improve in the days to come, you know, the governance and the accountability in government departments, in education departments, in HEC has to improve drastically. Mm. And if you want our classrooms, our education, our curriculum to be futuristic, then of course the hierarchy in education department has to reflect that. It has to be in sync with what we want from the education system. So yes, you're right. You know, a 19th century bureaucracy expecting results of a 21st century from a 19th century bureaucracy, I don't think there's a good match there.
Thank you. Thank you, folks. Thank you very much. I think this is a very interesting discussion. We must repeat it again after a while because things change and we all learn different things. And this is too vast a subject to settle in one podcast. But I think you've raised a number of important issues and we really need to begin to rethink education system. I hope you guys in your writings now will also take up fresh issues. I mean, the textbook boards are ignored. Technology is ignored. Decentralization is ignored. All the education writing that I've seen focuses on expenditures and on teacher training and on curricula. But the rest of the stuff, I think, is far more important these days. We need to think very differently about education. If we want critical thinkers, the education system must itself be subject to innovation and critical thinking. All the best. Hope to talk to you again soon, guys.
Soch Bachar ke saath, mera naam Nadeem Ul Haq hai.
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।